ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। Today is the most auspicious occasion of several important events. We have the appearance day of Srila Vamshivadarananda Thakur, the appearance day of Srila Shyamananda Prabhu, and the anniversary of Lord Krishna's Vasant Ras Lila and Lord Balaram's Ras Lila. we'll try to say a few words about these things. Even though it's really beyond my capacity. Sometimes there's a tendency, because we're conditioned souls, to overlook the importance of what we might consider relatively minor acharyas or personalities in our line, such as Vamshivadananda Thakur. But if we consider very carefully his position, it's really far more than we can comprehend. So today is a very good occasion, very auspicious occasion, to try to humbly bow down at the lotus feet of these great personalities and beg for their mercy. Srila Vamshivadarananda Thakur, he's known by several names, Vamshivadananda Thakur, Vamshi Thakur, etc. He appeared in 1416 of the Shaka era, and that's in West Bengal, of course. Mahaprabhu came to Puri to have darshan of his mother, came from Puri to have darshan of his mother in the river Ganga, and he stayed at the house of Madhavadas at Kuliagaon. Madhavadas was the father of Vamshivadananda Thakur, and at this time he excused Devananda Pandit for his offense. It's another famous pastime. So Vamshi Thakur was the son of Madhavdas. His mother's name was Chandrakala Devi. And some say that he was the incarnation of Lord Krishna's flute. Therefore he has the name Vamshivadan. On the day of his birth, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present in his house, along with Advaita Acharya. And Vamshidas was entrusted, after Mahaprabhu took sannyas, with taking care of Shachi Mata and also Vishnupriya Devi. Because the Lord took sannyas at a very early age and he left his mother alone, we know his father had already left this world, his elder brother had already taken sannyas, who was there to take care? So Vamshivadananda Thakur was given that responsibility, very exalted position, to be the personal servant of the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his wife as well. So he was the recipient of unlimited mercy from both of them. They were so much affected by separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that they had decided to give up taking food and water altogether. They felt that their bodies did not require any further maintenance. They didn't require living in this world any longer. But Lord Chaitanya didn't approve this, and he told them not to be so extreme. He instead gave them a deity to worship, and that deity is famous deity of Mahaprabhu. Still, if you go to Navadvip, you can find that deity as being worshipped by the Goswamis there under the name of Dhameshwara Mahaprabhu. Anyone who's been to Navadvip knows this deity. Very beautiful deity, Nimwood deity. So there was a deity of Gopinath there also, worshipped by his ancestors, and so he personally installed another deity named Pranavalabha there at that home. deity of Gopinath is now unknown, but Prana Vallabh is still there. So Bamshi Thakur resided at Bilvagam for some time with his relatives. He had two sons, Chaitanya Das and Nityananda Das. He never married, and he passed the worship on to his the sons of Chaitanya Das, were Ramchandra and Shachi Nandan. Ramchandra was the adopted son and disciple of Janhava Devi, and he established worship of Krishna Balaram at Bhaknapara, but he never married, so the worship passed on to his brother Shachi Nandan, whose descendants are now the resident Goswamis there. Bamshi Vadan Thakur is also a great poet. He wrote many songs, and he composed one song in particular about the Lord's acceptance of sannyas, for which he's well known. There is a book called Vamshi Shikha, which contains some information about Bamshi Vadan Thakur. That's all the information I could collect in the short time that I had to do so about Vamshi Vadan Thakur. About Shyamananda Prabhu, he appeared in Utkala, in the village of Tarendra Bahadurpur. His father's name was Sri Krishna Mandal, and his mother's name was Duriga. And they were farmers' caste, Sadgopas. So they had lost their previous children that had died prematurely before the birth of Shyamananda Prabhu. Therefore, he was given the name Dukhiya, because everyone knows here in India, if you have something that someone might be envious of, so they give their children names like Dukhi sometimes, just so that the evil eye will be averted. What is that you see on the trucks? Budhe Nazarwala Tera Muhkala. So this is the idea. He was called Dukhiya. And everybody said he would be a great saintly person. He was born today. And by the mercy of Lord Jagannath, it's as if he personally brought him here to propagate his teachings. He was very beautiful. He was just like Cupid. And if someone would just look at him, he would be very pleased. When he heard the glories of Lord Chaitanya Nityananda from Vaishnavas in his village, he developed some deep attachment for their lotus feet. His father was already a very advanced devotee, and seeing that his son was very absorbed in Gaur Nityananda, he told him that he should be initiated. The boy replied, "Srila Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu is my spiritual master." He's at Ambikal Kalna, and his guru is Gauridas Pandit. Nitai Gaur, eternally present in his house. If you give permission, I'll go there and become his disciple. We all know the story of Gauridas Pandit was worshipping deities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well. Very ecstatic pastimes in that regard. So his father was a little bit concerned that how will you get there, because they were living in Utkala. Who knows where is Utkala? Northern half of Orissa. Odisha in the old days was divided in two. Southern half was called Kalinga, and that includes what's nowadays part of Andhra Pradesh and part of Odisha, Odisha as they renamed it. And then the northern half is called Utkala. That tract of land is very much glorified in the Shastras. Very, very pious place. Many, many sacrifices went on there. It's auspicious in every way. So he took his birth there. But it's a little bit far from Mayapur Dham, a little bit certainly from Ambika Kalna. So his father was a little concerned. And so the boy suggested that there are so many devotees are coming to and from Puri and Mayapur especially, so I can go with them. So his father finally gave his permission. And after taking the dust from his parents' lotus feet, he set out for Gauradesh. Gradually he came to Navadvip, then Shantipura, finally Ambika Kalna, and he found the house of Gauridas Pandit there. He fell down and offered his obeisances at the gate of the house, just as Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu happened to be going out. And Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu asked him, "Who are you?" And he said, "I've come to serve your lotus feet. I'm from this place in Utkala. I'm Sadgopa caste, and my father's name is Sri Krishna Mandal. My name is Dukhiya." Hriday Chaitanya was very pleased by his sweet speech. He told the boy, from now on your name is Krishnadas. So they called him Dukhi Krishnadas. Since early morning this morning, I had some premonition that someone would come today. Now you've arrived. Sometimes it happens like that. So Sri Krishnadas began his service with great devotion, and on an auspicious day, his guru initiated him into the divine mantra. Hriday Chaitanya Prabhu could see that his new disciple was extremely intelligent and at the same time very devoted. So he ordered him to go to Vrindavan to study the literatures of the Goswamis under the tutelage of Srila Jiva Goswami. Yesterday in Chaitanya Vihar, we heard a nice lecture, Srimad Bhagavatam class, from His Holiness Keshava Bharati Goswami. And he was emphasizing this point in particular, that our late godbrother Sriman Gopi Paranatana Prabhu was very much eager to emphasize amongst his students that along with cultivating knowledge, which is really nothing but the accumulation of data, one also has to cultivate character. And in particular, the essence of good character is humility. So he was very much eager to emphasize that point. Shri Shri Gaur Nithai, Shri Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Shri Lalita Vishaka Sahitarara Shyam Sundar Ki Jai. Because, after all, there's a saying that if one has a lot of knowledge but is not gentle or doesn't have good character, especially is not humble, then his knowledge is just like a dog's tail. Why like a dog's tail? Because a dog's tail is useless for shooing away flies, and it's also useless for covering up that part that it should cover up. So it's useless. So in the same way, if a person has a lot of knowledge but has not developed good character, then it's also useless. And it was for this reason that Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu sent his disciple Dukhi Krishnadas to Vrindavan to study under Srila Jiva Goswami. It was also for the same reason, 500 years later, that Sriman Gopi Paranadana Prabhu would accept students in his care. He wanted to make sure that they understood this point. Because particularly in the Sanskrit department of the BBT, there's a long history of devotees who were very good perhaps in grammar, or perhaps not very good in grammar. But at any rate, devotees who had cultivated a lot of knowledge, but not really understood the essence of that knowledge, which is to surrender unto the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. Sri Guru Charani Rati Eishe Uttama Gati Je Prasade Pure Sarva Asha. Srila Prabhupada has had us sing this every day, not for no reason. So anyway, he was sent to Vrindavan, and he set out there. His guru gave him many instructions and conveyed through his disciple his obeisances to the six Goswamis. So on the way he came to Navadvip, and he found the house of Jagannath Mishra, and there he saw Ishan Thakur, and he offered his obeisances there, introducing himself. He stayed for one day. Ishan Thakur gave him his blessings, and the next day he set out for Mathura with a party of pilgrims. Back to Vamshi Vadan Thakur, together they were serving in a similar capacity. Both of them were taking care of Mahaprabhu's former house in Navadvip, and they were serving Shachi Mata and the residents of that household very loyally as representatives and humble servants of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Dukhi Krishnadas has now set out for Mathura, and on the way he stopped at Gaya. Gaya is in Bihar, in modern day Bihar. Famous place since time immemorial. For what purpose? People go there to offer pinda to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, particularly for the welfare of their departed ancestors. That's a responsibility of all children. Anyone who has parents is automatically born with that responsibility. Of course, if someone is a liberated soul and has perfected pure devotional service, then that person is not obliged to follow these kinds of injunctions, although generally they do, in order to set the example for the rest of us, because we have to do these things. Anyway, so he also, He took his darshan of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu there, and he remembered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lila of being initiated by Ishwarapuri. After that, he went to Kashi. Kashi is which place now? Banaras, they call it. Varanasi. Actually, there are two rivers that ran into the Ganga there. One is called Varun, and the other one is called Asi. So, Varanasi. That's the origin of that name. That also is a famous holy place since time immemorial, although it's better known perhaps for Lord Shiva's residence there as the Kashi Vishwanath Shambho. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also performed many important pastimes there at Kashi. And most of our acharyas had gone to Kashi also for their education. So those who have entered higher circles of education should not feel guilty about it. Our acharyas had done the same thing in their time as well. Of course, the standard of education, whether at BHU or any other college in the world, has slipped some in the last 500 years, and that's something to consider as well. But at any rate, then finally he came to Mathura, and after taking bath at Vishranti Ghat, he took the darshan of Sri Keshava. How many people have been to Mathura to see Keshava Dev? Very ecstatic darshan there. If you've not been to Mathura or seen Keshava Dev, you must go there. Keshava is one of the oldest deities in Braj. Very, very important deity. Beautiful deity also. They've installed a Pratipumurti there. So then he came to Vrindavan, and he found out where is Jiva Goswami living, because in those days Vrindavan was a van of the Vrindavan Mahanagar Vangaya, aisa lagta hai. And therefore we have to see signs all written around Vrindavan that please don't, you know, keep the dam clean, and, you know, please, the cows are crying, don't feed me polyethylene bags. Anyone seen that one? So it's, and I don't know what they're going to do for electricity with all these high-rise condominiums going up. There's already a problem, and it's only going to get worse. And yesterday, Keshav Bharti Maharaj told me, well, what about water? Electricity aside, what about water? What are they going to do? Especially if they keep polluting the Yamuna the way that they're doing. Something to think about. At any rate, it was a forest then, so he had to search for some time to find where is Jiva Goswami living. Finally, he came and he fell at the feet of the Acharya, and he introduced himself, mentioned what is his mission, full particulars, and he said that my spiritual master has entrusted me to your charge, and please fulfill his desire and send him back. send me back to my guru after some time. So he began to serve Jiva Goswami, because we don't necessarily go and begin to take instructions first. We serve. It's understood that the instruction is a blessing. When I was in college, my thesis advisor was giving me some advice on how to tackle your subject. This is not the Krishna conscious approach. We don't tackle our subject in Krishna consciousness. We don't try to gain knowledge in that aggressive manner. And instead, it's understood that it's a gift. It's a function of mercy. Therefore, for the humble disciple, all the import of the Shastra is revealed. And the spiritual master is naturally inclined to give the most beneficial and relevant instructions to a disciple who has a very submissive, gentle, and humble attitude. This is the idea. So I know even in the music field, this Pandit Ravi Shankar, who's a famous sitar player, I don't know if he's still alive, he was going to his music teacher in a place called Maihar. He studied under one of the Muslim ustads there. And he was only serving for a long time before he was even asking for any kind of instruction. So that's an example, even in the mundane realm. The culture is retained with this essential quality of humility, which is now being erased as fast as possible. If you look at the billboards, just like when I went to recharge my cell phone once, there was an advertisement, a poster there, with a bunch of smart-looking teenage Indian youth with this attitude. And the caption said, each one of them you could see was very visibly holding the company's cell phone, as if they had been initiated into the sampradaya of the transnational corporation. So each of them was very faithfully holding their cell phone, and the caption read, "Get smart." So not only you have a smart attitude, but the implication is that unless you buy our cell phone and patronize our multinational corporation, you're just not even smart. And Indians are just lapping this up as if it were honey from Svargaloka. Now you can think about that for some time. But at any rate, this is the idea, that knowledge is something which is gifted to one by grace as a function of mercy, ultimately from Krishna, and especially from our gurus. Therefore, in Indian culture, the principle of humility is ubiquitous as much as possible, even in mundane interactions, as I've mentioned already. That has to be maintained because the society itself has the capacity to transmit a particular mentality, a particular consciousness, on a cultural level. It's not necessarily a spiritual thing, but it is definitely the substrate of any adhikar that anyone may have in the human form of life. For that reason, it's entirely essential, and for that same reason, Srila Prabhupada was very strongly pushing on this point. It's really just the social manifestation of what Krishna calls in chapter 16, sattva samshuddhi, purification of one's existence. That's something to think about. So in the time of Shyamananda Prabhu, there was this principle was more widely permeating the society. Even up until 2 decades ago, it was more widely prevalent in this society. But with so much kusanga being not only embraced, but voluntarily sought out, eagerly sought out, you know, these values are gradually eroding because the consciousness behind them is eroding. That's the principle of Sangha. Sangat sanjayate kama. Your desires reflect what you are primarily associated with. So if we associate with the internet, or if we associate with corporate policies, or you know, the standards that they set in place, then the consciousness will have a corresponding result, commensurate result. That's an important point to think about. So anyway, Dukhi Krishnadas had this very humble service attitude, and therefore the Acharya blessed him. He asked his spiritual master, "What service can I do?" And Jiva Goswami gave him the service of sweeping Seva Kunj. As he swept, tears flowed from his eyes. Why? He was conscious. And sometimes he would loudly chant the holy names of Sri Sri Radha Govinda, and sometimes he would become inert while remembering their pastimes. This is why Hriday Chaitanya Prabhu sent this boy to Vrindavan to study from Jiva Goswami. He had this kind of adhikar. His character was such that he took it very seriously, what it means to be a servant, what it means to be a disciple. Sometimes he would put the broom on his head and shake the dust out on his head. Because this Chinmaya dust, it's very eagerly hankered after, even by great demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva. Even Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, could not enter into the Das Lila. So how fortunate is that person who has been entrusted with the service of sweeping out Seva Kunja every day? He was conscious of this. So, the Queen of Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani Ki Jai, was very pleased with the service of Dukhi Krishnadas, and she desired to give him her darshan. One day, while he was cleaning the kunj, his heart was filled with love, and then he just happened to notice there was something was shining in the dust. It was a beautiful ankle bracelet, payal. And he picked it up and touched it to his head. Then he bound it in the corner of his upper cloth, and he thought, whoever this belongs to, I'll give it to them when they come to look for it. The next morning, the Sakhis were quite shocked when they noticed that Srimati Radharani's left ankle bracelet was missing. Srimati Radharani explained, last night when I was dancing in the Kunj, it must have fallen off. Please look for it and bring it back to me, whoever finds it. When the gopis came to search for the bracelet, Vishakha Devi noticed Dukhi Krishnadas sweeping the Kunj. Don't think that your activities are not being observed here by those who matter. Don't think like that. This is Vrindavan. It's not what it seems to be. And it's every day less and less what it seems to be. In other words, every day it's less and less obvious, the divine nature of this place, because there are those who are working very hard around the clock to obliterate any vestige of Krishna consciousness that is manifest here and elsewhere in the whole subcontinent. So she noticed him sweeping the grove, and she asked him, have you found an ankle bracelet here? Dukhi Krishnadas was so mesmerized by her sweet words and radiant form, which looked like that of some demigoddess descended from heaven, that he simply stared at her, dumbfounded. She asked him again, have you found any ankle bracelet here? He said, yes, I've found it. Who are you? I'm a cowherd girl. Where do you live? I live here in this village. Is it yours? No, it's not mine. It belongs to a new bride in our house. How did it get here? She came here yesterday to pick flowers and it must have fallen off. Okay, so then she can come and get the ankle bracelet. It would seem as if he had some idea that something is more than just a girl lost her bracelet. So Vishakha Devi asked him, no, you can give it to me. He said, no, I will give it to her personally. It would seem he knew. Then after a few moments, Vishakha Devi returned with Srimati Radharani Thakurani. Ki jai. She stood in the shade at the foot of a large tree. Vishakha Devi called out to Krishnadas, hey Bhaksa, the person who lost her ankle bracelet has come to get it. Dukhi Krishnadas completely forgot himself while gazing, even though it was from some distance, at the unparalleled, brilliant splendor of Sri Vrishabhanu Nandini. Even when you stand at some distance in front of Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar, you can feel the radiance of Srimati Radharani dominating this entire temple room, shining with infinite grace. So what to speak of someone as sensitive spiritually as Dukhi Krishnadas? In great joy, he handed the ankle bracelet to whom? To Vishakha. At this point, Dukhi Krishnadas could sense that something was profound was taking place. His eyes filled with tears and he fell down on the ground to offer his obeisances. In great ecstasy, he rolled in the dust. Vishakha then told him, O best of the devotees, our Sakhi wants to give you a benediction to express her gratitude. Dukhi Krishnadas replied, I don't want any other boon. I only pray for the dust of her lotus feet. Vishakha then replies, in that case, please come here. Take your bath in the Kund and then come back here. Dukhi Krishnadas walked towards the Kund, and after offering his obeisances, he immersed himself in the water. When he came out of the water, he had attained a transcendentally beautiful feminine form. Coming out of the sacred Kund, he stood before Vishakha Devi and offered prayers. Taking this new Sakhi by the hand, Vishakha approached Srimati Radharani and introduced her new Sakhi, who fell at her lotus feet. Then Srimati Radharani took the ankle bracelet, which was marked with some kumkum from her lotus feet, and she impressed it upon Dukhi Krishnadas's head. She said, this tilak will remain on your forehead. From today on, you'll be known as Shyamananda. Now you can go. After she said this, Srimati Radharani and her sakis were no longer to be seen. Dukhi Krishnadas's trance broke, and he found himself as before, alone, in his male body. Yet the tilak applied by Srimati Radharani was still on his forehead. Being overwhelmed with emotion, he repeated over and over again, "What have I seen? What have I seen?" While tears of ecstasy rolled down his cheeks, after reciting prayers hundreds and hundreds of times to Srimati Radharani, he finally returned to Jiva Goswami, who was struck with wonder when he saw this new tilak on the forehead of his disciple. After he offered obeisances with his eyes full of tears, he recounted what happened when Srila Jiva Goswami asked him at Seva Kunj. Hearing what happened, Jiva Goswami was very impressed, but he cautioned him, "Keep this quiet." We'll get to that in a moment. These things are very confidential, and they're not really meant for public discussion. So, noticing that Dukhi Krishnadas's tilak and his new name and everything had been changed for some unknown reason, naturally all the devotees began to talk. You can imagine. We know how devotees talk, don't we? So, the news finally reached Ambika Kalna, and when he heard about this apparently unauthorized behavior of his disciple, Hrida Chaitanya Prabhu was furious. He set out for Vrindavan immediately. He arrived sometime later, and he let it be known that he desired to see this, what used to be Dukhi Krishnadas. Dashamananda came and offered his prostrate obeisances at his guru's lotus feet. Seeing the tilak, Hridayananda Prabhu was enraged and said, "Your conduct towards me is extremely abominable." He wanted to chastise him, and eventually he began berating him and even beating him. The Vaishnavas finally managed to restrain and pacify him by offering various explanations on Shamananda's behalf. And Shamananda, for his part, simply tolerated it and continued to offer his obeisances faithfully. That night, Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu had a dream, and Srimati Radharani came to him in her dream, and she reprimanded him very severely. She said, "I am the one who gave him this name and this tilak. Who are you to question that?" So he begged for forgiveness at her lotus feet and considered that he had become an offender. The next morning he called for Shamananda. He embraced him again and again and again with great affection. His eyes full of tears, he said, "You're so fortunate." Srila Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu remained at Brijadham for a while, and at this time it was decided that some form of punishment should be meted out to him for his behavior towards his disciple. Just see. Be very careful when we criticize devotees. Be very, very careful, especially here in Vrindavan. It's very difficult to know. What is that? There's a famous doha. Tulasi is sansar mein sabse milya bhai, na jaane kis roop mein Narayan mil jaye. The same logic is applicable here. You never really know who you're dealing with and what their Krishna consciousness is. It's invisible, Krishna consciousness. There are some standards by which we can judge, and since we have to judge, we do, on the basis of certain standards. But the sober analysis is that ultimately there are no rules. We were talking about karma and dharma yesterday, myself and Keshava Bharati Goswami, and someone had asked a question, when we come to Krishna consciousness, is our karma erased immediately? Because sometimes we find so many statements that imply that in the Shastra. Or does it take some time? Because we also find some statements that imply that. And we concluded that It really depends on whatever Krishna wants for the individual involved. Which is to say that Krishna is not bound by his own system of dharma, even though he holds the rest of us accountable to it. In that sense, karma really functions as nothing but a ruse for the Lord to hide behind some appearance of objectivity in order to justify doing whatever he wants, anytime he wants. So in Vrindavan, this principle is paramount. And in Krishna's Leela, that's why he's called Leela Purushottam. The thing that's important to him is not Maryada, but rather Leela, on the basis of Prema. Love. All is fair in love and in war, as they say in English. So, at least for Krishna, that's true. But even for a devotee who is a pure devotee, Krishna's internal associates, they have no rules either. And we don't know who we're dealing with all the time, so we have to be very, very careful about this. At the same time that we establish standards of behavior in our society for practical, as a matter of practical necessity, we have to keep this point in mind as well. So anyway, here the devotees had decided that at least for the sake of loka sangraham evapi, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, for the sake of benefiting society in general, they decided that they had to make some show at least of discipline. So they gave him the instruction that he should serve the Vaishnavas, and particularly feed the Vaishnavas and put on festivals for the Vaishnavas. So after staying for some time, then Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu returned back to West Bengal. And then later on, Shyamananda Srinivas and Naratam, they had studied the literatures of the Goswamis in great detail and in great depth, and it was decided that they should go to West Bengal and transmit all these literatures there. How fortunate are we that they did so? Because now we have these literatures. Of course, on the way, at Vishnupura, they had stopped in the court of King Virhambir, and somehow the books were all stolen at that time. Can you imagine the anxiety that these three devotees felt? That all the Goswami's books, the original copies, autograph copies, were all stolen. Can you imagine the anxiety? No, you can't. But somehow or other, by Krishna's arrangement, because we were reading yesterday in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Krishna is very, very expert in somehow evoking agony in his devotee. He's very expert at agonizing his devotees. And he derives pleasure from that. We should recognize that if we are chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, sincerely, we are asking for trouble. Because Krishna has no rules. And he enjoys us, period. To be enjoyed by another person, you have no say in it. Therefore, Mahaprabhu says, he calls him Lambata. Lambata means a scoundrel, reprobate, absolute rascal. And in his final prayer of the Shikshastika, this is the attitude that he's taking in the spirit of Srimati Radharani. We can see this again and again and again in Srimati Radharani. He says, whatever you want to do, you're my prananata. Without you, karuna na hele kaniya kaniya prananara kivo ara amar prananara kivo ara. Ara prananara kibovar. If you don't give me your mercy, then I won't be able to maintain my life. This is the same attitude that Srimati Radharani is manifesting in Krishna's Leela. We see that even in the very beginning of Krishna consciousness, this is what a disciple has to try to emulate, try to to beg in this way. I was reading in Padyavali that Srimati Radharani was in a forest kunj that she had carefully decorated in anticipation of a rendezvous with Krishna. They had made the arrangement. It was expected that Krishna would come. All night long, she's completely anxious. You know what it means to wait for someone upon whom you depend very eagerly. Multiply that by a billion or three. So all night long, she's waiting for Krishna to appear, and finally, the early morning hours, the moon is on the far side of the sky, which means it's going to dawn pretty soon. Still he's not come. What must have happened? What's going on? Her mind is racing in 1,000 directions at once. Finally she sees Krishna sauntering in, looking a bit disheveled. There's betel smeared on his mouth, there's kajal on his face, there's kumkum on his clothes, there's black, long black hairs on his garland. You can understand. And so could Srimati Radharani. And when she saw him in this condition, she was absolutely astonished. And you know what she said? She said, "These other gopis, they don't know what love is. You may have found some gopi who is okay with the way that you behave like this. But the reason she's okay with it is because she's also taking advantage of you. They're just using you and they don't know what real love is. But I've given myself exclusively and entirely only to you. And so when I see you like this, only I suffer. You don't suffer. They don't suffer. Only I suffer. And I really suffer." This is what she told him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has adopted that attitude when he says, "Ashdishyava paradatam pinashtumama darshanat maramahatam kurotuva." Maramahatam. Manama means we all hold things that are very dear to us. The most cherished thing that we have, we hide that. We iron case that. We lock it very carefully and keep it away from anyone's access in the innermost recesses of our heart. Is it not? The thing which is the most confidential, most dear to you, nobody knows that. Is it not? That is called marma. And marma hata means when he slashes that thing, kills that thing. Ashlishiva paradatam pinashtuma madarshnat marma hatam kurotu va yatha tatha va virat hatu lampato mat prananathas tu sevanaparaham. But he's, even though he's lampata like this, he's also my prananatha forever. And it's hopeless. It's like a moth into the flame, Srimati Radharani says. Anyway. Shyamananda Prabhu, he was preaching mostly in Orissa after the books were recovered, and he got his guru's blessings, and he went to back to Orissa, and he was extremely successful there. We know he made many powerful disciples, especially one of whom is named Rasikananda Thakur, another very great soul. They have their own way of worshipping Lord Chaitanya. They have their own tilak, their own way of cooking, their own way of everything they do. It's an exalted branch of the Sampradaya. If you go to the Radha Shyamsundar temple off Loy Bajar, you can see Shyamananda Prabhu's bhajan kuti is there still. And it's underground. He was doing such intense sadhana that he would go underground, literally, in order to focus. And the place where he was sweeping is also there across the street. There's renovation going on there now. The Goswamis who are worshipping there have a very wonderful standard, very beautiful deity worship. Sringar is unparalleled in all of Vrindavan. Nice kirtan they do as well. Although many of the signs are written in the Oriya language, so it has a special flavor to it. Shyamananda branch. So he preached there, and he made many Muslims into devotees. He turned many atheists into Krishna consciousness. He made these very exalted disciples as well. There are many more stories that we can say about this, but the time is up. I had actually prepared to say a few things about the Ras Lilas of Sri Krishna and Sri Balaram, both. In the Chaitanya Bhagavata, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur reminds us that Balaram also has his Ras Lila at this time, Vasant. In the Kartik, there's Ras Lila, in Vasant there's also Ras Lila. So this is springtime. And that's in the 10th canto, chapter 65. You can read about that. So, once Lord Govinda and Lord Rama, the performers of wonderful feats, were playing in the forest at night with the young girls of Raj. Krishna and Balaram wore flower garlands and spotless garments, and their limbs were beautifully decorated and anointed. The women sang their glories in a charming way and bound them to affection. How did the women sing? Rag Vasanth, Rag Kafi. These are the melodies that are for this time of the year and for this pastime in particular. And bound them by affection. The two lords praised the nightfall, signaled by the rising of the moon and the appearance of the stars and lotus-scented breeze, and bees intoxicated by the fragrance of jasmine flowers. Krishna and Balaram sang, producing the entire range of musical sounds simultaneously. Their singing brought happiness to the ears and minds of all living beings. That's Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 34, 20 through 23. In Parasoli, near Govardhan, is where Radha and Krishna enacted their Ras Yatra in this season, near Chandra Sarovar. There are many places there that one can visit. And similarly, in the nearby village of Paint, Lord Krishna, during the Ras Lila, at this time, he had appeared in the Chatur Puja form to the gopis to try to outsmart them. that we know that pastime as well. Now, there are some very important things that we should consider finally, last but not least. In Los Angeles, on the 15th of November in 1968, Madhu Vishapuru, my godbrother, asked Srila Prabhupada, "Can you tell us something about Krishna's Ras Lila?" And Prabhupada, after a pause, he said, "Krishna's Ras Lila should not be discussed in public meeting. It is most confidential. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never discussed. He discussed Krishna's pastimes, Lila with the gopis, with his confidential, very confidential circle. Lord Chaitanya had many thousands of followers, and he was not discussing even within these five persons, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Gadadhar, Shivasadi. These five persons. So when he was at Navadvip, he was not discussing even with them. So what to speak of others? He set up this example so that in the future people may be very cautious. Unless one understands what is Krishna, how can he understand Krishna's pastime? So discussion of Ras Lila is the summit of Krishna consciousness. It's not ordinary thing. They're purely spiritual. There's nothing material. But because we are not completely free from material concept of life, we may think that Krishna's lila is something like this material lila. That is offense. But it is the ultimate goal to understand Krishna's Ras Lila. But you have to wait for relishing that Krishna's Ras Lila to become more perfect in Krishna consciousness. Those who are with anartha, misgivings, even if they are devotee, if they have got full surrender to Krishna, they will also derive benefit. Like that, Prabhupada is describing. So, Krishna consciousness means to practice Krishna consciousness while we are in this material body, and after giving up this body, we enter into the spiritual world for factually participating with Krishna. If you want to enter the Ras Lila, if you desire like that, so then you love Krishna in that way, as the gopis. Then you'll have the same perfection. There's no difficulty. Simply you practice. But you have to forget the Ras Lila of this material world. Otherwise, then you play havoc. The risk is there. He said, that Krishna is enjoyed with so many girls, so let me also become Krishna and joy, then everything is finished. He gave some very careful warnings like this. Now in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila chapter 9, text 137, Vyasadeva, the supreme authority on Vedic literature, composed a verse beginning, Nayam Sukhapo Bhagavan, because no one can enter the Ras Lila in any body other than that of the gopi. Does anyone know this verse? Nayam Sukhapo Bhagavan? Anybody know? Means you're not going to understand Bhagavan as long as you are in the bodily concept of life, and particularly if you're a karmi, a jnani, or a yogi. This is the idea. And Prabhupada explains in his purport, this verse confirms a verse from Bhagavad Gita 9.25. Yanti deva vrata devan ityadi. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me. In the material world, every conditioned soul changes his material body again and again. But when the spirit soul is purified of all material coverings, there is no longer a chance of his accepting a material body. Such a soul then remains in his original spiritual identity, a state that is possible to achieve only by understanding Krishna in truth through the practice of Krishna consciousness. Now note here that to explain Ras Lila, Srila Prabhupada is repeatedly quoting Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes people have the mistaken concept that when we graduate from Bhagavad Gita, then we go to Bhagavatam and even beyond that, and Bhagavad Gita is left aside. No. Bhagavad Gita you take with you into Ras Lila. It's always applicable. Do not leave it aside. That is why we find even Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author of Govinda Lilamrita, he's quoting Bhagavad Gita repeatedly. You can read Chaitanya Charitamrita and see. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my abode, O Arjuna. So as far as the Ras Lila pastimes of the Lord are concerned, it is futile for one who is within the material world to attempt to imitate the Lord's dances. One has to attain a spiritual body like that of a gopi to enter the pastimes of the Ras Lila. In the Nayam Sukhapo verse, the devotees are referred to as bhaktimat, that is, fully engaged in devotional service and freed from material contamination. One cannot enter into Krishna's Ras Lila dance simply by artificially imitating it or artificially thinking oneself a sakhi and dressing up like one. Krishna's Ras Lila dance is completely spiritual. It has nothing to do with material contamination. Therefore, no one can enter into this pastime by artificial material means. Now, unless we are pure devotees, what other means do we have? We only have artificial material means. This is why the caution is there. When we become pure devotees, that's another matter. But until that time, we don't have any means. The only means are artificial, and they are not sufficient to convey us into the Ras Lila. This is the instruction of the Nayam Sukhapo verse, and it must be strictly understood. End quote. That's again from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, there's much more that we can say about this, but I think it's getting way over time now, so I have to stop. One more thing from Srila Prabhupada. This is again Los Angeles, December 23rd, 1968, a class on Bhagavad Gita 3, 6 through 10. just like there are so many professional chanters. Nowadays we see lots of professional chanters, don't we? Their business is because people like chanting, so they've made this chanting business. And it is business, make no mistake. Or a professional Bhagavat reader. People like reading a Bhagavat. There are so many expert Bhagavat readers, they can show many caricature just to attract people. And such people, generally, they describe the Rasleela of Krishna. Because Rasleela is resembling just like dealings between young boys and girls. So they take part. They take that part, particularly Rasleela, easy way. Easy way to make money. Easy way to draw a crowd. Isn't it? So he continues here. Just like in America, I've seen so many persons. They're writing books on Krishna, about Krishna's pastimes, as if Krishna has no other pastime. Because these things are very easily saleable. Saleable. Prabhupada's English. So they're writing books on that. Krishna's dealings with the gopis. No, this is not good. You should not take Krishna's activities, Krishna consciousness, professionally for livelihood. That is dangerous. Your life should be sacrificed for Krishna. That is wanted. Otherwise, you shall be pretender. Okay, I'll stop here now. Does anybody have any questions or comments? I know it's late, so maybe we should just adjourn. But thank you very much for listening attentively, and all glories to Srila Prabhupada.